This is a Social Storytellers podcast.
Welcome to We Are the Watchers. Tom. And Leah. Are the Watchers.
Welcome to We Are the Watchers, episode 129. Tom, welcome to this week.
Tickety boo.
Already middle of May, pretty much.
I thought it was still March.
I think a lot of people are under the impression that even though some of this time has felt really long, it's also felt really short because it's almost like you're just waiting.
It's just all compounded.
Yeah. It's an odd one. And also the things like, I don't know, like for me, I would be well into the first half of the hockey season. So we yep. would be going, like I would have had gone to several different games. Training would still be a thing. Like we only went for like 4 weeks and then we had to stop. And so you're like those milestones that are usually happening around this time of the year for me have stopped.
This should be peak television time. May is when everyone's ramping up to their big finales and all this sort of stuff. It's all thrown out.
Yep. I was talking to our wonderful friend and special guest to the podcast sometimes, Abe, about, you know, shows that he's been looking forward to, stuff that he's been watching recently. And we were like, there's going to get a point where suddenly there's not that many shows.
It's already there for me.
Well, yeah, I do have a bit of a backlog though, so I'm still trying to get through that. But yeah, like the excitement of new stuff.
I've gone from 4 new programs on average a day to 1 every day, maybe every second day. Like there are times at the moment where there's no new show at night where I go to watch something and I've got to dig something different out. And yeah, same deal, looking through the backlog, some of it's appealing. I watched a bunch more Parks and Recreation again this week.
It feels good to watch that.
It does.
It's very bingeable too. It's one of those shows that you can watch a couple of episodes of and you're like, I feel better about everything.
Well, I will get to it later, but I actually watched a lot of it in anticipation of 2 things.
Okay. And now, a word from our sponsor. As 2020 trudges along and most of us are still at home trying to stay safe, a new game show has arrived to entertain and challenge our brains. It's called What Is This?, where contestants must correctly identify items and activities from a bygone era, aka earlier this year. What are jeans? How does one apply makeup to one's face? True or false? Was regrowth ever considered socially unacceptable? What is hanging out with thousands of other people watching balls being thrown, hit or kicked around called? Is it possible to be friendly with someone outside of a Zoom meeting? Listen in as contestants comb through their memory banks and cast their minds back to when things weren't normal. What is this? Streaming now. Well, look, I've got a little bit of good news regarding stuff being made.
Sure.
I guess it depends on what you like, but it's sort of a sign of people in the film and television industry doing a bit of a pivot slightly in how they are producing stuff. There's a German teen soapy kind of show called I'm gonna attempt it. It's called Unter uns.
Unter uns.
And they stopped for only a week and they ended up filming with very small crews, and Neighbours is doing it as well. The Australian soapy Neighbours is doing it as well. Neighbours has got 3 different crews that actors are attached to and locations within, I don't know, wherever they film in Melbourne. And so they're small enough so that they can socially distance themselves within that small group. And also if someone from one group does get sick, they've still got 2 more groups that can continuously film, which I think is a really clever idea. I know that The Block is still filming as well.
Oh, thank goodness.
I know. It's really good. Another Melbourne show, I think. So, yeah, there are shows that are still getting made. And I think, you know, for stuff like I was thinking like Netflix, you know, Stranger Things and like these big shows that we're really excited to be coming back. I mean, that's usually I think it came back in July, actually, last year. Maybe that was
But that was after like a good 18-month break or something.
Yeah, because they did around Halloween before then. But I think we might get more documentaries because it's possible for them to have very small crews, socially distance while still framing shots, because all they really need to do is make sure that they're filming whatever they're doing, whether it's an interview or I'm thinking, of course, Tiger King sort of stuff, you know, like show a person in front of a cage with an animal. Well, the crew member can be 6 feet or 2 meters away. It's possible. So I think that's the kind of stuff that we will be seeing.
I think you're right. We'll get plenty of that. I think the other one that they'll start experimenting more with is, and they did this a lot in Good Place, which is stitching together shots. So you get, you know, one shot of one crew, filming one direction of that particular actors. And what you're saying, if they're segregating actors into different crews, then film the other stuff. Otherwise, those episodes you get of dramas where the B and C list characters are off on a B and C tier plot, we're going to find that a lot more noticeable.
Yeah.
Could the funny tech guy is going to spend a lot more time in the van, you know, things like that.
Yeah, yeah. I was thinking along those lines, could we see more ensemble stories where they can have two or three different main storylines going on? So that they can film separately constantly.
Very much so.
And we would never know.
I think we're going to get plenty of that sort of stuff. Shows like This Is Us and those sorts of dramas, I think they're going to do just fine.
Yep.
Shows more like The Flash, where it's all built around one person, that makes it a lot more difficult because suddenly if that person gets sick, then everything goes down. And yeah.
That's true. I was reading actually about the Friends reunion that's going to go to HBO, and it looks like even though it had been delayed indefinitely, because, I mean, how do they know? They've got absolutely no idea when they can start production. But it looks likely that they're kind of making tentative plans for the end of summer in the US, over in the in the Northern Hemisphere. The chairman, Bob Greenblatt, said that they're holding out for this special to be done with a live audience. They really want to do it like it used to be done. They said that – I've actually got a quote. Yep. He said we want to have that live, raucous audience to experience, you know, six great friends coming back together. And we didn't want to suddenly do it on a web call to have six squares, people shooting in their kitchens and bedrooms. He said, though, if the stay-at-home conditions do continue, they may have to do something like that, which would be a shame.
Yeah, but, I mean, this week you've had Parks and Recreation, you've had The Office have done something, Community, a lot of the, a lot of these things. Content's content at the moment, and I think as this goes on, people will become less precious. So I totally agree. It would be way, way, way better to do in front of a live audience.
It would be a shame not to have that live audience, not to have that energy, because, you know, even when you're in a live audience or you've gone to watch a comedian or something, it's really fun, and the whole audience can lift up individual audience members. And I think the impact that would have on the cast, particularly people like Jennifer Aniston and Courtney Cox and, well, all of them, Lisa Kudrow, all of them who have not done that sort of live studio audience sitcom, it not only would lift it, but it would also make them feel and act like they used to back when Friends was on, because that's the environment that they were used to.
Yeah, if you're going to try and recreate the magic, do it properly.
Yeah.
I think in the meantime, plenty of people would love it if they would do a table read.
Yeah.
They all jumped on Zoom and just did a table read, that get the script for an old episode, change some of the references in there.
That's a great idea.
Or, you know, Chandler, could I be any more distant? update some of the references.
Yeah, like that. I like that. I hope they're listening.
There you go. Bloody Chandler and Monica are living out in the suburbs.
Yeah, like Connecticut or something, I think it was.
Yep. And I think they had enough room to let Joey stay. I don't know if they're going to, because canon wise, Joey was still out in LA.
Yeah.
He moved out for the solo show. And first season, which got cancelled, didn't end with him going back to New York.
So we don't know what's happened to him.
No, maybe he's popular now. Maybe he can zoom in to catch up with them.
I would like it if his life sort of followed Matt LeBlanc's in that Joey ended up in England doing some sort of show. Yeah. Something like that.
Yeah.
It'd be fun if they sort of referenced real life pretty closely.
The best character arc I could see him having in England is becoming friends with Jamie Oliver and then being flabbergasted at the type of foods that Jamie forces him to eat. What do you mean no chips?
Yeah. Make the trifle like Rachel does.
Oh, why did you put tax on soda? People hate Jamie Oliver.
I reckon the people that would hate him the most would be the production staff on his cooking shows, because he never washes his hands, and he opens jars and he puts them over here. It would take them ages to clean that.
I reckon nice old ladies that run school tuck shops would hate him more.
Yeah, true.
Because they have to cop grief from kids every day. I don't want a granola bar.
I just want chicken nuggets and chips.
Yep.
Ugh. I want baked beans and egg or whatever they eat.
You didn't say the magic word. You're listening to We Are The Watchers.
Bloody Jamie.
Jamie.
I know we're having a whinge about things that aren't happening, but you know one thing that is happening?
What?
That we've already said it's happening, but Mandalorian Season 2, they're reconfirming that it's still on schedule, that we're getting it. They're not getting delayed.
It's brilliant.
And they also said that Boba Fett, Temuera Morrison himself, is going to be appearing, which is odd.
I also think it's huge news, not just for the Mandalorian Season 2, but for Star Wars universe itself.
It's confusing. Is he like?
Yeah, where did he crawl out of?
That's what I mean. Like in the expanded universe books, back when Star Wars was still Lucas, he did crawl out. Well, he got partway out, and then Dengar, the bounty hunter with all the head wraps, he comes and basically rescues him, and Boba tells him to jog on. But that's not considered canon anymore. So no one knew whether he crawled out of the Sarlacc pit or what. They have to address that. B, it just makes it, I don't like it timeline wise and stuff. And then with all the Clone Wars stuff, you've got all the Captain Rex and all the lookalikes running around there and stuff. So we assume it's going to be Boba Fett, but maybe it's not. It could be a rogue Fett clone. It could be a still loyal stormtrooper clone.
That's true. I mean, the actor himself is older, but so is the timeline.
That's right.
So I think it would still it could potentially fit. It could do a slight de-aging or not even bother. Just give him a wig or get him to dye his hair. I think he's gone grey.
Captain Rex is blonde.
What's his face from Blade Runner? That kind of like really hot white blonde.
Oh, sure.
Go with that.
Deckard. No, that's not Deckard.
No. He's the main.
Deckard's Harrison Ford.
Yeah. That actor, I think he passed away recently.
He did. Roy Beatty, I think his name was.
Let's have a look. Blade Runner. Can you believe that was made in 1982? I mean,
yeah.
I know it's made in 1982, but at the same time, it surprises me. I feel like it, the way it looks now, it still looks quite fresh, that it would have been made late 80s.
Rutger Hauer.
Is Roy Beatty.
Oh, yeah. I enjoyed Rutger Hauer in Hobo with a Shotgun. Or might be Hobo with... No, it's Hobo... Yeah, Hobo with a Shotgun. Not, I was going to say Hobo with a Chainsaw.
That's the sequel that never happened.
Become a watcher on Facebook. Facebook.com/WeAreTheWatchers.
Hey, do you know what today is?
What?
There's two things in history that when we're recording happened today that I thought were quite interesting.
I love On This Day. Go.
Okay. 51 years ago, Monty Python formed.
51. Holy cow. That would have been it there when they were at uni, right?
Yep. So that was a seminal moment. Mm. And then flip those numbers, 15.
Yeah.
Another hugely seminal moment. today, 15 years ago, Leroy Jenkins ruined things for his whole team. Remember, so for those of you who might not know very specific internet humor, Leroy Jenkins is a reference to a World of Warcraft video from 2005, turns out, of a team, a clan who had worked hard up to an end-level boss and were basically they were standing around talking plans and tactics. It's staged. It's clearly staged. If you play the game, it's staged. But they're talking tactics of what they're going to do. And then one of their members who has been in a different room walks back in, sits at his computer, says, "All right, chumps, let's do this," screams his own name, Leroy Jenkins, and then runs through triggering every trap, instance, bad thing that could potentially happen in the next hour of gameplay at once. And it proceeds to the rest of his team being graphically decimated and killed and yelling abuse at Leroy. And it ends with Leroy saying, "Well, at least I've still got chicken."
Leroy Jenkins is it's an iconic name now.
It's important.
Yeah.
It's up there with the Monty Python in terms of early internet humor. Well, not even early, but like early meme humor and stuff. It is a huge pillar of what came to be.
15 years ago as well. That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
That's so long ago. Well, so is Monty Python. I've got some Tiger King news for you. Sort of.
Sure.
Two things. There's going to be another series from the filmmakers who made Tiger King. And two, it will either include looking into the 2003 mauling attack of Roy from Siegfried and Roy, or it will be solely about that. Because the producers have been searching out Chris Lawrence, who was a tiger handler for them in their Las Vegas show, and he was on stage with them when the attack happened. And apparently the producers got in contact with Hollywood Reporter asking if they could get the contact details for Lawrence.
Yeah, they over the years they've very much romanticized the relationship that Siegfried and Roy had with the Tigers. And this guy's like, "Nah, they were pretty rough to the Tigers," and it's kind of a bit more tell all. So I think it's using the Tiger King brand, as in let's look at people focused on tigers.
It's a big name too, like a big names, I should say, in the tiger world.
I would really be into the idea of let's expand it out and let's look at weird people who've owned tigers. Let's have an episode about Mike Tyson.
Yeah.
And, you know, or one about celebrity tiger ownership because, you know, Shaq popped up in Tiger King and there's other ones out there who own tigers. And then, of course, you can take it overseas and you can go to Thailand and look at the weird, like, if you've never looked into the reason why people really hate petting tigers and stuff stems from Thailand and these places where you can go and they've got 300 drugged up incest, bad tigers that you can go and, you know, they're doped up to the gills so you can lay with them for photos and this sort of stuff.
Yeah.
Then you get people creating ligers, crossing lions and tigers, or tigons, which is crossing a tiger with a lion.
Yeah, it depends on which gender is which parent. I don't know about you, but I can't hear the word liger without thinking about Napoleon Dynamite. I just can't.
No, it's fair enough. I learned a new one of those yesterday. I was yesterday years old when I discovered that something to do with winter is lasting too long up in the Arctic and the polar bears are staying south longer. And it meant this year for breeding season, or the last few years for breeding seasons, they've mingled territory with grizzlies. And there have been sightings of what they are calling growler bears, which are like grizzly polars crossed that are apparently very angry.
This is the beginning of a movie plot, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm surprised that like sci-fi hasn't made this as one of their Sharktopus movies or something like that.
Or even something like along the lines of, you know, searching for the Yeti kind of documentary. You know those ones where it's like a documentary but it's not really. It's like a lot of coming up next kind of stuff.
I saw a similar one of those on a Wolfen.
What is that? Wait, a wolfin, a whale and a dolphin.
Yeah.
Because you know, I was going walrus. Whale or walrus. Which one would be less worse?
Well, walrus and dolphin are both still, I want to say cetaceans. I believe that's the word for them.
Right.
Like, not sea dogs, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, sea mammals.
I'm all about this weird crossing of stuff. Do an episode of that, of Tiger King. Fall down the rabbit hole of weird genetic blending that private owners do.
Also, they have to do these kind of stories because they can't follow one particular story anymore, because that Tiger King season one, that was years of footage.
Yeah, as done.
There's nothing more to know.
And no one involved in that show will do anything nearly as insane as that ever again.
No, because they're wary.
Yep.
Yeah.
They know what happens.
Properly powered like a Petrelli brother. You're listening to We Are The Watchers.
Let's pivot a little bit to Batman. We know that Val Kilmer was Batman once.
Mm.
And there were stories around the time that he was difficult to work with, and that's the reason why he was only there once. Yeah, so he was in – no, he didn't come back for Batman and Robin. That was the George Clooney movie.
Yes.
And – he says it was all because Warren Buffett came to the set. Now, I'll explain more. Warren Buffett took his kids to the set of Batman, and Val Kilmer stayed in the bat suit because he knew that, you know, this, he knew that these guests were coming, and they were like, oh, there's Batman, cool. And then they spent more time looking at all the props on set, and Val Kilmer said, okay, it doesn't matter who plays Batman. I'm Batman, no one cares. It's about the world of Batman. And that's why he didn't feel like he needed to play Batman again, and he moved on.
Well, he did not give Batman particularly much depth or character, and that could very well just be working with Joel Schumacher and, you know, Silver.
That's true.
And this was a very flashy neon world.
Was this the third one?
So this is the third one. Many people dislike, I have a lot of time for, but I watched it at the right age that it was being aimed at. It was making Batman far more kiddie than the first two ones had been.
Yeah.
This is the one with Jim Carrey as Riddler and Tommy Lee Jones begrudgingly involved as Two-Face. Oh, God, he hated it. Oh. I really enjoy that film, but there is absolutely nothing stand out about what Val Kilmer does.
Yeah.
I think the other part as well is, as he says, no one cares who plays Batman. Everyone cares who's playing the villain.
Yep. Because you just told me who the villains were played by, and I'm like, oh, that's right. That's that movie where I was struggling to remember which storyline was the Val Kilmer Batman movie.
And if you want to get real critical and analytical with it and stuff, the reason why that happens specifically to Batman as opposed to Spider-Man, of where there's been so many Spider-Mans, is you don't watch Batman imagining you were Batman. You watch it always looking up in the sky, whereas the Spider-Man movies are more wish fulfillment of imagine, you know, he's got an everyday life that you can relate to. He's keeping his aunt happy, paying rent, having a job, this sort of stuff. There's not a lot that the average person can relate to with Batman. Mm. My parents weren't killed in an alley. I don't regularly have visions of pearls dropping to the floor. Not haunted by bats.
Not a billionaire with a butler.
Well, not that you know about. I think something's private.
Yeah, that's a good point. I've never directly asked that question.
No, but it just means there's all these barriers up with Batman that make it difficult to put yourself in that situation. So it's far more relatable with Batman to think about his colourful, bright villains that he's against. Whoever's playing Batman is a bit of a cipher.
Mm.
They have to disappear into that role. And you get someone like Christian Bale, who that's their jam, disappearing into a character and simultaneously giving into and suppressing your own ego to become someone else. That's his thing. And I think that's why he's so memorable with it and stuff. My dream, and this is not just my dream, but a lot of people say this, of I want there eventually to be an old man Batman. In the same way we got Logan, which was Logan as an old man, have old man Batman and have Michael Keaton come back and play Bruce Wayne as a 70-year-old crippled man. He's in full leg braces. He requires a cane to get around, neck brace maybe, and stuff, like show what 40 years of crime fighting did to his body and have him training the next one or trying.
Is that Robin?
Well, I don't know if it's Robin turning into Nightwing. I don't know if it could be Damian, who is Batman's son. There's all sorts of things. Or you go the other side of he killed Batman 10 years ago and someone's trying to bring the idea back and he almost becomes the villain trying to stop this new person. Something like that. The reason why I bring that up is I would love to see Michael Keaton do that. I have no interest in contacting Val Kilmer about Batman ever again. He doesn't need to. Same with George Clooney. They can both be lumped in there and just...
Like you said earlier, it could be because when I watched the Michael Keaton Batmans, I was in that age. It was perfect. It was a bit dark, but it was also a little bit cartoony enough so that if you were a kid, not a little kid, but, you know, like between the age of, 10 and 14 or something, it wasn't too scary, but it was dark enough that it intrigued you. And I always look back fondly on those ones. Like I never have to think to myself, oh, who were the villains in those two first Batman movies? I know who they were. It's a hard call, but I would say I look back more fondly on the second one because Danny DeVito and Michelle Pfeiffer were amazing. Now, I'm not saying that Jack Nicholson wasn't, but those two were just... Right.
Batman Returns is so much better. I love that movie. It has Christopher Walken.
Yeah.
As a third tier villain. That's or right. Something like Max Schreck. And it was the basis for the Batman ride at Movie World for years.
Yep.
So it's just it's ingrained in me. That's, you know, that's the best of the Keaton ones. Of the other two, Val Kilmer's one is so much better than George Clooney.
Oh, yeah.
Clooney had nipples.
Yeah, that's right. One of my memories of the Val Kilmer one was I was at the movies and I'd gotten like the huge popcorn and the huge drink and I drunk most of the drink and I was trying desperately to hold off to the end of the movie before I had to go to the bathroom and I'm like, I can't do it and I had to go out and I remember thinking, hurry up, I want to see the I can't miss any more of this movie.
Got to get back to all of Arnie's great ice puns. Ice to see you.
Stressed out. Memories.
It's funny if Val Kilmer, like, I wouldn't return to Batman.
No one's asking.
A week ago, Alicia Silverstone piped up and said she'd love to play Batgirl again. And the internet collectively went, nah.
We just want you in Clueless again.
No, it just wasn't even really that covered. It was just kind of...
It was a couple of people on Twitter going,
I don't know what scenario, what Elseworlds scenario
which universe
we find ourselves that would be a thing.
With a Batgirl in her 40s. Yeah, I get it.
Batgirl in her 40s with George Clooney and just...
It's never going to happen. Now, I know you have watched some of this. I don't know if you've watched all of it, but Upload on Amazon Prime got good news. It's already been given the green light for a second season.
Which is good because I finished season one last night.
Oh, great. Well, I mean, don't get too excited because we may have to wait a bit, but I'm sure you'll have a fair bit to talk about.
I will. We'll get into it.
Yeah.
I started watching it yesterday morning.
Holy cow, you got through it all. That's amazing. How many episodes?
10.
Okay.
And you know, that's not my bag.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it. We'll get to it
and
watch it.
You've been watching some trailers?
I saw some trailers. So Snowpiercer, the TV series, finally kicks off in like a week or something like that, May 17th, I think. Goes to the trailer. They've done such a good job of being really mysterious and withholding so many details that I can't clearly work out where this fits with the film, if this fits with the film at all.
Right.
It appears – so the film is set, I want to say, like 22, maybe 16, maybe 22 years after the fall or something. This is only 7.
Right.
After the fall of the world. And it looks like the class structures are all in there. And, yeah, it's looking real solid. That's already picked up and started production, I believe, on season 2.
That's the one where Sean Bean is going to be in season 2. So
yes.
We're pretty sure he's not going to last long.
I would imagine not.
That's got Jennifer Connelly in it, who I haven't seen for a while in something. Like I personally haven't watched her in something for a while, and she looks really badass. Like she's the boss lady of that train.
Yeah, I think she's doing Ed Harris's role.
Yeah, probably.
Or I mean, I don't think she's Tilda Swinton.
I don't think she is either. She seems too straight-laced.
Yes. So in this trailer, we saw a few other characters that look more like they might be the Tilda role.
Mm.
I'm really excited for this because I love that movie.
That movie's great.
It's really good. And I feel that if it could be handled well and adapted in a different way that creates an interesting story, it gives me a lot of hope for what the Parasite adaptation will be.
Which is that's HBO, right?
It's Parasite. It's either HBO or Netflix. I can't remember.
And who's got Snowpiercer? Is that Hulu or is that Amazon?
I think it's TBS.
Okay. Yep, you're right. It is because it's I remember thinking, oh, it's not a prop, like it's not a big streaming service. TBS is or was a TV cable station, yeah. Right?
From what I've seen with this is kind of like how one year AMC suddenly stepped up and had Walking Dead and then Breaking Bad and, you know, all this sort of stuff. I believe it's them taking a similar route of they've been doing great drama for years, but like stepping up a production quality notch, which is cool.
I'm very happy.
I also saw a trailer for Stargirl, which is coming out later in May. That is a really confusing release schedule because there's DC Universe app and then a week later it's on the CW and then a week after that it's on CBS or something as well. I don't know. It jumps around all over the place. Luke Wilson is in that, and it looks like he plays the original Starman, and it's his daughter who is becoming Stargirl. And there'll be flashbacks to what happened with the older team. And if this is anything like Doom Patrol, it won't be quite as silly, but it looks like it's going to be combining looking back on a nostalgic team mixed with teen angst and that sort of stuff. I reckon it's going to be a lot of fun, so I'm keen for that. The trailer dropped for The King of Staten Island, which is the new Judd Apatow movie.
I forgot to watch that trailer. I saw it yesterday and I went, oh, I'll watch that in a bit and then didn't get around to it. So what's it like?
It's really good. I don't want to get too much into it. It's Pete Davidson and they basically put the trailer out announcing that they're going to be putting it out on video on demand rather than waiting for an eventual cinema release because it's the sort of thing that wouldn't blow up at the cinemas anyway.
Mm.
You know, it could surprise everyone and be the size of a Knocked Up or something like that early in the career, but it looks a lot more intimate than that. And it's semi-autobiographical, I guess, or something along those lines, but it's about a guy in his early 20s still coming to terms with the fact that his dad died in 9/11 as a firefighter.
Right.
And maybe him being encouraged to continue the family tradition and dealing with the trauma of that. It really surprised me. I thought it was going to be a very acerbic mess of references, which is normally Pete Davidson's thing. And the trailer floored me of oh, no, this is going to be a bit more grown up. This is a facing mortality type of film and stuff. It looks good. I'm keen for that.
Definitely have to watch it then.
And then one last trailer I saw this morning is for a documentary that's coming soon on iTunes. And I believe it was going to be part of Sundance this year. And so they're putting it out anyway. It's called Starship Earth. This is it's based on, I think it's 8 people, but it's a true, complete, like it's a documentary about from 1991, I believe it was. These 8 people went into a huge biodome or a biosphere type thing. They called it Biosphere 2 because I think Earth was meant to be Biodome 1 or something like that.
Ah, okay.
But essentially that movie Biodome is a bit of a piss take of all of this.
Mm.
But these 8 people went in there with the intention of simulating what it would be like to live in a colony on the moon or on Mars or something like that. And the trailer doesn't give too much away. I've read bits and pieces about this before, but the trailer leads you to the guy in charge of the project in there kind of goes insane and turns it into a cult and they all turn on each other.
I think I've done a little bit of reading on this years ago because the more you're saying, the more I'm like, oh, that's right. I remember going down this rabbit warren online. So this is now made into a documentary.
Yes, and they've got the people who were in there talking, a lot of them for the first time ever, including the cult leader. including the cult leader.
Great.
And he's joking about it of like, yep, that's me. I'm the cult leader.
And the rest of them are like, not funny.
I think it's going to be a bit of a mix. It looks like it goes a little bit Lord of the Flies, and some of them can laugh about it now, and some of them maybe are still stuck there mentally. Either way, solid. Looks like a solid watch.
What was it called again?
Starship Earth, which I only picked on the title because that's the name of the ride that goes through the big sphere at Epcot. That big spaceship. That's called Spaceship Earth. So I was like, oh, is that a documentary about that?
Yeah.
And I clicked on it and I'm like, oh, no, this sounds way more interesting.
Yeah. Do we know when it's coming out? Because can you remind me when it comes out?
I will.
Because I'll get it.
I'll keep an eye on for when that comes out. I don't think it should be too much longer.
That's really cool. I'm excited about that. Feels good to be excited about stuff.
Doesn't it? I'm going to have a quick drink of water and I'm going to pour one out for Jerry Stiller.
Yeah, I saw the news about Jerry. In fact, I think it was Ben that sent a tweet about it. Very sad. The age of 92. I saw that Jerry Seinfeld posted a picture of him holding up the album cover.
Nice.
It's just serious look on his face and just the album cover, and you can't help but look at the album cover and just smile. Very funny guy. And I know that Ben does look like him, but looking at him, Jerry, I should say, as a younger man, it's reinforced how much Ben looks like his dad.
Yep.
It's incredible.
Got a watching suggestion? Email thewatcherspodcast@gmail.com.
Let's get into some watching suggestions. Now, I think probably we should kick it off with that show that we were talking about. You said you watched it all in one day. We're talking about Upload. I've seen this advertised a lot online.
Yes.
It looks so good.
It was really good. I'll say that straight up. I really enjoyed it. It is sold as a comedy. And there are less jokes than a lot of other comedies out there. Then I kind of feel, okay, so it's by, I believe his name is Greg Michaels. He worked on the US adaptation of The Office and has adapted a few things for American audiences. This legit feels like an American version of Black Mirror.
I know the episode you're talking about.
But like a long form version of that with some more absurdity. So if it's kind of a meeting point between Black Mirror and The Good Place, but it's the idea of a digital afterlife that's programmed by somebody. So no one's fooled into thinking they're actually in heaven or anything like that. There's an acceptance that the people that upload themselves don't believe in traditional religion and heaven generally and this sort of stuff. And so they're instead choosing to have a eternal digital life. And there are scientific experiments and things we see throughout the season of people downloading, seeing whether they can come out of that again.
Right.
It doesn't appear to be the case.
Okay.
It goes quite poorly.
Well, at least the show is addressing that question that I assume they expected the audience to ask.
By episode two, they shut down the possibility of you can't escape. You are in the digital realm now. The main guy, Nathan Brown, hilariously shares a name with my old neighbor.
Oh, really?
I thought that was very funny. But he's played by Robbie Amell, who is the younger cousin of Stephen Amell, who's Green Arrow. Robbie was Firestorm on The Flash, and he was recently in Code 8.
That was the movie he made with...
Yes, made with Stephen. And big Canadian sci-fi production and stuff. Really solid stuff. He's a funny dude, but he's really good looking as well. So there are times, like you can see in the past that he's had roles where they've just focused on his looks and he's really enjoying getting to play some silly stuff.
A bit like John Hamm.
Yes, that's a very good way to put it. But he's not comedic. He's reacting.
Okay, I get you.
So he's much more the straight man, but some weird, you know, non-earthly stuff tends to happen. There is a mystery going on throughout. I don't want to get into it at all because it unfolds at its own pace. It's not central to the show, but it does answer some things towards the end. And it was kind of done in a way that if a season two didn't happen, it wouldn't be the end of the world.
Okay.
It did, but I'm glad that they have announced that, because the ending of it is like, ooh, okay, that just got a lot lot more complicated for everybody involved. Essentially, he's a bit of a dreamer, and he's a coder before he dies. He's in a car accident. His self-driving car plows into the back of a truck, kills him. And his girlfriend that he's not been with particularly long, who is a very rich socialite, Paris Hilton type, while he's on the gurney being wheeled into the hospital, gets him to agree to be uploaded to her family's afterlife. They're very, very rich. And so he can go to Lakeview, which is kind of like the most premium of all afterlives.
Right.
And he has to decide right there on the spot, because if you die, you can't be uploaded.
That makes sense. It's too late. Yes. Yeah.
And he's like, I just want to talk. Can I talk with my mom about it? And they're like, no, you have to make the decision right now. And so, yes, he decides to be uploaded, and we watch how it's done, and it's clearly irreversible.
Yeah, right, okay.
You know, there's a lot of talk about storage, and it might be just in terms of storage of body parts.
Oh, right.
Yeah, this is what I mean. If it goes very Black Mirror bleak.
Yeah.
Bleak. But, yeah, I was really intrigued by the show, enjoying it, nice pace, good romantic plot lines and this sort of stuff. Yeah, we got through the whole season in a day, which is not my usual bag. But
10 episodes.
Really, yeah.
Awesome.
Oh, that's what happens the first day Shay goes back to school.
That's how you like to party these days.
I had big plans, and instead I stayed in my pants and watched a guy deal with a digital afterlife.
Honestly, sometimes you need those days. Sometimes you just need to be able to do next to nothing. It's needed.
Well, look, as I say, I've been rewatching tons of Parks and Recreation. That was getting excited for Upload, because that all, you know, same people and this sort of stuff. But it was also because that first episode came out of Celebrity Watch Party, which I mentioned to you, I think last week, about the Gogglebox.
Yeah.
Celebrity Gogglebox or whatever for the US. And Rob Lowe had a lot of fun. And it was better than I expected the show.
So is it how close to the traditional Gogglebox? It's exactly the same. So they're all watching the same stuff?
As in, narrator introduces a clip from a show of this week the group have been watching. And
okay.
And then it cuts to them reacting to it, and that's all it is. But it was, who do we have? We had Meghan Trainor, the singer of All About That Bass. Rob Lowe was in there. Some sports casters, a whole bunch of Americans that I didn't recognize.
Yeah.
Jojo Siwa with her mum.
Oh, no way.
Yeah. So
that's awesome.
It was a good mix. Master P and I believe Romeo is his son. They're rappers. Master P, very famous rapper. So a really good mix of personalities. I don't know if it's the same stars every week, but the clear winners in terms of stars were the Osbournes.
Oh, really?
So Jack's not with them at the moment.
Okay.
And they like they say at the beginning of the show, each group is only a maximum of three to reflect the number that everyone's allowed to have.
Yep.
But it was Sharon, Ozzy, and Kelly. And it's just the three of them. And Ozzy has no time for any of it. And he's on a reality show about other reality shows as a former reality show star.
Is he aware?
He falls asleep on the couch.
Yes.
I think it might have been during RuPaul's Drag Race.
Oh, no.
Or something like that. But, like, he's not offensive about it at all. He just nods off and they're like, Ozzy, what do you think of the last lovely costume makeup? I'm sorry, but was it quite watching?
It's quite normal, though. That's human.
Oh, but like at another point, and they never address it, Ozzy's got a ventriloquist doll of himself in his lap and talks about a program they were watching with the doll, and then the doll never comes back again.
Okay.
What do you think? It was really great. Me too.
Oh, my God.
It is fantastic. And then at the end of the program, it cuts to a few of the celebs, and they're like, thanks so much for watching tonight. I did this tonight in aid of, and they say their charity.
Oh, cool.
If you'd like to donate, here's the link down below. So each of them get to do their own little private thing.
Yeah, that's nice. I like that. I think the Gogglebox format works really well at the moment because it's literally what everybody else is doing. And then to have celebrities do it, that's brilliant.
for a lot of celebrities are scrambling to try and appear like us at the moment, and Gogglebox is a really good way to do that.
Absolutely. That's brilliant. Look, along the same lines, I've been remembering to watch Have You Been Paying Attention again. We've spoken about this show before. I've watched the past few weeks. And they're all not in the studio with Tom, but they're all still there. You know, you've got your regulars. They seem to be throwing a few more extra New Zealanders in. I mean, I know they've always had like one or two New Zealanders, like mainly comedians or whatever, on there as guests, but they seem to be more regular now, which I really like.
Now I might be talking out my ass here, but one of the bigger comedy production companies in NZ closed up earlier this year.
Right.
Or like stopped producing a lot of their bigger shows, at least well before COVID and stuff like that. So a lot of the NZ guys have been hustling and appearing on a lot more shows around. And I imagine that there might be a little bit of content sharing at the moment.
Us
sending them stuff likewise back. So agreed. I reckon we're going to see more of that, which is cool.
Yeah, I'm happy with that. It just means it broadens the talent bank for us to enjoy. But they're so fast because you know that every time he asks a question, the very first answer is going to be a joke. No one's ever going to answer correctly the first time. And they're so fast. And I think, I wish I could be that fast. Sometimes I need to sit there and think about it.
Do you think they get the questions in advance?
Oh, yeah, for sure, because most of them all know the answers. And at first I thought it was because, most of them work in radio. They would have been following these sort of stories every day. Like that's the kind of stuff they have to keep their eye on. But, yeah, they know, too many of them know. I remember when there was one last year where Mick Molloy was on. And he couldn't get a word in. He wasn't getting – it's a great show and it's so easy. Like it's such an easy platform, but it's so watchable, like Gogglebox. So watchable. They go well together, actually.
Nice.
They're the ones who knock. You're listening to We Are The Watchers.
What else have you been watching?
So, yeah, New Zealand, keep it coming.
Fantastic.
The most recent episode of What We Do In The Shadows – I think might be my favourite episode yet. So it was directed
out of all season, both seasons.
Out of all seasons, wow. Maybe even the movie as well. This one was directed by Jermaine.
Awesome.
And it's an episode. We got one episode in the first season that focused a bit on Colin, and this episode is called Colin's Promotion. And so Colin Robinson, as he's always referred to by everyone before me, he's an energy vampire rather than a bloodsucker. So he can drain anybody just by talking to them. So somehow he gets promoted at his job and people he can then start draining on demand of calling people in for performance review.
And boring meetings.
And taking and ruining conference calls. And he becomes like omnipotent. He becomes the most powerful being in the universe.
Oh, wow.
And I'm not going to go, like, that's the first 5, maybe 10 minutes of the episode. I'm not going to tell you anything more than happens because it gets really out of hand. And I've not seen the show go this, like, wow before. But, like, yeah.
He has to be one of the most original characters, like original ideas for a character that I can think of.
It is the most New Zealand idea ever to have a vampire that sucks your soul by draining you of your energy just by being, because everyone can relate to that.
Yes. The fact that he works in the office and he walks up to people and has boring conversations with them, I'm like, I know 12 of these people.
That's why this episode was so transcendent for me, in that it's such a silly world they've created. And this episode was still existing with that silly world. Mm. But every single thing that Colin does in this episode, you know someone who's done before.
Yeah.
And you can – it's – the way I'm describing it, it sounds like it would be painful to watch, but somehow it's the flip where you're cheering him on, and like he keeps getting worse and worse, and you should be worried about it, but you're like, oh my god, I want this worst guy ever to go further. What else can he do?
More screen time for him. That's what, as an audience member, you're after. You just want more of him on screen.
he becomes petty, and Colin has never been petty. He just lets things wash off him.
Yeah, he does.
But with a little bit of power, he suddenly starts getting retribution on people. And watching someone who knows how to bore someone literally to death become petty was phenomenal.
That's brilliant writing.
At one point, he literally throws someone into a coma by shooting finger guns at them. Like, oh, he walks past one person and says, TGIF, hey? And they collapse into a lump. And then he shoots finger guns at someone else and they collapse drained.
Yeah. Oh, I'm so glad the second season is sounding super solid.
It's such a weird mix. So it's set in New York, but they film it in Canada. It's crewed mostly by New Zealand people.
And the actors are from all over the shop.
I think they're all English. The big ones are all English.
I think so, yeah.
Kyven, Matt Berry. God, that show is worth watching if just only for Matt Berry's line readings.
I 100% agree.
The way he could say, Monday, hey. He'll say a sentence in a way that no one else on earth would. The same way you get a Christopher Walken or a Sam Rockwell or these people that have their own things. Matt Berry, it's just such a way of finishing. Love it.
He's brilliant. Speaking of brilliant, I've been watching Mexico. This is the Narcos season or seasons, I should say. There are two of them focusing on the drug world of Mexico, starting with weed. And, you know, you've got Miguel, they just call him Felix. He's got about four different names. It's Miguel Felix, who played by Diego Luna, which is great to see. But it's the beginning of the El Chapo story. Now, okay. When I think of El Chapo, I think, you know, drug lord, but also loves digging tunnels.
Yeah.
Loves digging tunnels to get drugs to and from Mexico and the US, and loves digging tunnels out of jail. That's how I know him. I'm sure people in the US and Mexico and all those sort of countries surrounding there, they probably know a fair bit more about the story than I did going into it. But the first season, El Chapo's only there a little bit. In fact, he's introduced as a driver.
Okay.
And I think is probably only in maybe half of the episodes. And even then, he's sort of one of the guys that helps Felix.
Yeah.
Diego Luna. The end of the first season, once again, because I didn't know the story, had me at the edge of my seat. So there's this bit where someone, I won't give too much away, but someone gets kidnapped and you're sure that they're going to be okay. And then after a while, you're like, maybe they're not going to be okay. I'm not feeling too confident. And the second season starts off just on a roll. Like, it has taken the momentum of the last season's finale and just gone with it. And the second season is amazing. There's a man in it who is narrating the first season. His name is Scoot McNairy. That's the actor's name. And you know his voice.
I know Scoot McNairy. He was in, is it Monsters?
He has been in heaps of stuff. He was in,
he was in Justice League or Batman vs. Superman. He's had his legs blown off.
He was in True Detective. He was in Argo as well. He's been in heaps of stuff. Anyway, he's one of those people. He's like What's-His-Face from The Wonder Years, the narrator who is one of the bad guys in Home Alone. He's
Daniel Stern.
Yeah, it's one of those voices that you're like, I know you, but you're just being the narrator. And then as soon as you see his face, you're like, oh, I've now connected the face and the voice. Ah, amazing. Anyway, he's got a bigger role in the second season. It's really good. It's very similar to Narcos with you know, the beginning with Pablo Escobar in the way it's filmed, and it looks beautiful, and it's very graphic and violent, but story's very different, and there are links and ties all through it where both of these worlds, the Colombians and the Mexicans, have to work together or not work together or whatever. And it's the kind of thing where you don't realize how much of it is in Spanish and how much you're reading the subtitles because you're so invested in the story.
Sure.
That when there is a bit where there's English and it drops back into Spanish, you think, This has been happening the whole time and I've not even noticed. I'd say it's 70% Spanish, 30% English. It's not much. It's a great story.
Nice.
Can't wait for this more tunnel action. I just want to know. That's what I know him for.
Turns out it's easy being green. You're listening to We Are The Watchers.
The other thing I'm just going to, we don't need to dive into it, it's just a plug, but the Lego Masters Australia finale is going to be this weekend.
Yeah.
We have been smashing through, catching up this week here at home, me and Shay. Lynn's been joining us. We've been building lots of minifigures for the wall behind. A week ago, I went to a Lego VIP event, as I tend to do on the first Sunday of each month. There was meant to be new stuff, and because of COVID,
damn you,
new stuff hadn't arrived in time.
Mm.
But they let me buy a whole box of minifigures.
Amazing.
The blind bag one. So we've been opening that up, and we've got a wall behind us that we stuck plates on, and we've been creating. Oh, I think we've got enough room up there at the moment for 200 minifigures. We've got 120 or something up there at the moment.
So you've still got enough room for the collection to grow.
Oh, we're stretching it out. Mm. We've already got the panels to build out another four. But yeah, so it's Lego madness around it. What a great season this has been. Physics challenges. And
yeah, they have. There's been that sort of whole upside down underneath the table was an interesting one. And I thought we would see more of them falling and breaking, but it didn't seem to happen. I knew what they were doing.
The shaker one was insane.
That's my favourite one.
I won't say yet, but the water one that happened last night was amazing. Mm. And I say I won't say yet because we've only gotten through half of it and then it was bedtime because we had to get up for school.
Yeah, but you can watch it. It's available on...
Oh, we've got it on the Nine app or whatever. We'll watch it end of day today.
Mm.
But, yeah, messing around. Like, Brickman even says, he's like, I work professionally with Lego. I have never built something with the intention of putting it underwater.
Mm.
The only people that I know do that is actual Legoland because they have a water ride and it's meant to be in a submarine looking at – and they have real fish and sharks and stuff in there. Fun note, the people that own Legoland, Merlin, also owns the – Sydney Aquarium.
Oh, okay. I think you've told me that before, but it still is.
They own the sea life chain. So that's why you have a lot of sea life discovery centres within the Legoland parks, or you'll have Lego appearing in sea life aquariums around the world. I cannot, I build a lot of Lego. I would not know where to start trying to build something that would hold up to the physics of water.
Yeah,
it's such a different build.
You would never have tested it before. Like
Lego's not, apart from the old boats that they used to make that were one piece actually floated, which they don't do as much these days. They still do some of them, but not as big as they used to. Lego's not designed to mess around in the water with. It's fine in water, but they haven't built it to, you know what I mean?
I know what you mean, yeah.
And, the Lego pieces are hollow inside, which means they capture and retain air. So every piece you'd have to... Oh
yeah, air pockets, man.
Yeah. Anyway,
no, it's been a great season. I'm going to be sad when it finishes.
I think we'll be talking more about it. They're already putting out calls for in the next season.
Amazing.
For contestants.
That's awesome.
I could see that being a show that could easily swap to a different quarantine model.
Mm-hmm.
A socially distanced thing. I mean, they already had the studio pretty well spread out.
Yep.
I could see that.
I could also see them spinning it off to Lego Masters Junior or Lego Masters Family. Like, there's a lot of room for them to expand.
That's the thing. The UK, the original one, was mostly a mum or a dad with their child. Or, there were a couple of team. There was one team that was like a 10-year-old boy and a 13-year-old boy.
Yeah, right.
Like, much more kiddie. And then the American one is we're adults.
Yeah.
And they're all reasonably slick looking and everyone on there is clearly an Instagram influencer wants to be a professional Lego builder or somewhere where the Australian one seems to have found this perfect midway point of everyone on that show is a genuine geek.
Yeah.
And
who are really good.
They're all really good.
Yeah.
None of them are media trained.
No.
And I love it.
Yeah.
So loose and larrikins, and it's just nice bit of positivity, and I'm going to be bummed when it's gone.
Yeah, me too.
I think we're getting Lego Masters Germany or Denmark, maybe.
Oh, cool.
In a few months. So there's another one to come. And I'll say now, Lego Denmark means it's coming from the birthplace, and those people are going to come correct.
Yeah.
There will be no mucking around on that show. It will be some next level builds.
Lucky that's the one that comes later. Yeah, slowly. It's gradually up
Don't
in the ante.
Don't set the bar with that.
No, otherwise we'd have no hope. Do you want to do a quiz?
May I?
You
I've been waiting all week.
Sure can. This one is called Name Three. Give me three actors who played certain types, certain roles, or certain characters. It changes up depending on which question. So,
all right.
So you basically got to give me three actors.
I've got to think in triplicate.
That's right. Three actors, first off, who have played the President of the United States of America. It can be movies or TV shows, I've decided.
All right. I'm going to say Harrison Ford. I'm going to say Kevin Klein, and
yep,
also
that counts.
Not Kevin Klein.
Yeah.
And Bill Pullman.
You know, Bill Pullman was the first one I came up with, and then it was Kevin Klein, and then the next one I thought of was Martin Sheen from Westworld. Not Westworld, West Wing, sorry. Yeah.
Well, I like the idea of him playing that role, reprising that role in Westworld.
He would be the long-lost brother of Anthony Hopkins.
Yeah.
What about James Bond? An easy one for you.
I'm going to go with Timothy Dalton, George Lazenby.
Come on, who's the next one then? Who are you going to pick?
On a technicality, Woody Allen, who played Jimmy Bond.
I'll accept that.
You said Bond.
I did not specify, so that 100% counts. What about a pirate?
You want three people who've played a pirate?
Yep.
I'm going to say Johnny Lee Miller in Hackers.
Oh.
He was pirating things from
yes.
the internet.
Yes.
I'm going to say Tom Hanks. Because he was Captain Phillips.
He was.
But then the other guy who was the pirate said, I am the captain now, which technically means Tom Hanks
they
in
switched,
that situation
yeah,
becomes
parts.
The pirate. And I'm also going to say Alan Tudyk in Dodgeball, who plays Pirate Steve, the guy who thinks he's a pirate and then gets told to grow up and shaves his head and he's all disappointed, but then he comes back.
Very good.
Go.
I had Dustin Hoffman from Hook.
Very good choice. Mm. Very good. Captain Hook, good pirate. Mm.
Very good. I mean, I know
Sorry,
been
I was
few...
being difficult.
No, you're being entertaining and creative. Wasn't Christopher Walken at one point Captain Hook in there was a like a musical for television
yes,
about
the live television musical?
Sure, it was. Yeah, vague yes. recollections of that.
Tick-tock, watch out for the crap. Wow.
What about buddy cop duos?
Well, we'll go with Mel Gibson and Danny Glover.
Solid start. Very good.
We'll go with, there's so many choices.
I know.
Turner and Hooch.
Oh.
Starsky and Hutch.
Starsky and Hutch, yeah.
Are we looking for the actors or just the characters?
Oh, let's go actors. So who would you prefer as Starsky and Hutch, the TV original or Ben Stiller and Owen Wilson?
I can't pluck their names right now, so it's Owen Wilson and
Perfect.
Ben Stiller.
I like that answer.
And, buddy cops. I want to say Damon Wayans and Damon Wayans Sr. and Stifler, Sean William Scott, on season 3 of Lethal Weapon.
It counts. It 100% counts. My honourable mention there is Channing Tatum and Jonah Hill from
Very good.
21 Jump Street. Did they make two movies? I've only seen the first one.
They did. 22 Jump Street.
That's right. What about a doctor? I'm not going to be any more specific than that. A doctor. Three actors.
Christopher Eccleston, David Tennant, and Peter Capaldi. They're three people that played the Doctor.
The Doctor, perfect. Yeah, I thought if you weren't going to pick the Doctor, I thought, all right, there's a lot you can go for as well, like ER. So you got all your George Clooney's. I thought Robin Williams in Patch Adam as well. Patch Adams, I think it was. Yeah. But yeah, Doctor Who was who I went for first as well. The last one is a super easy one. In fact, we had a big chat about it at the beginning. Batman.
Three people that have played Batman.
Yep.
Will watch me be difficult.
Yeah, I'm daring you to. It's a challenge.
Oh, I'm really annoyed at myself. I'm blanking on his name. Diedrich Bader. There it is.
He was
on Drew Carey show. He voices Batman in many of the cartoons currently.
Good call.
And we'll have Kevin Conroy, who has traditionally voiced Batman. And in my mind, when I think back, or when I read comics of Batman, that
it's
is
his
Batman
voice. Yeah.
Voice. And Robert Pattinson, because we haven't seen him yet.
I don't know what he's going to be like.
Okay.
I love how the headline for Batman this week was it's going to be super dark. Okay, that's very specific. Thanks.
What's new?
Yeah, that's right. Exactly.
Seems to be what happens with Batman.
So I'm not sure why they thought they needed. Maybe they just thought they needed to say something about it. I don't know. Well done. Well done. That was a good one.
Thanks. That was a good quiz.
Yeah, that was a bit different. It was more sort of like a. It was here is the base rules, and you went, all right. I see that challenge. I'm going to raise you.
Not today, conformity.
On that note, Tom, thank you very much.
I'm going to put a coin in the jukebox and listen to my favorite song by Figure and Dan and the Modal Nodes.